good Monday afternoon. Hope you're having a good day so far today. 12:07 is the time. Hi there, and welcome to the noon hour. I'm Rick Howe. A little later this half hour, historian and author Blair B. joins me with another Halifax History Moment. Today, as you know, is the 1st of April, April Fool's Day. Canada celebrated its first April Fool's Day on record on this date in 1868. It was on this date in 1734 that Canada's first lighthouse opened at Louisbourg. On this date in 1873, the RMS Atlantic is wrecked off Prospect. 546 of the 957 people on board perished. And it was on this date in 2001 when Halifax became the first municipality in North America to restrict the cosmetic use of insecticides, pesticides, and herbicides. And Blair will join me in about 10 or so minutes with his Halifax History Moment for us. But first up this noon hour, Schooner Sports and Entertainment has struck a deal now with Canada Lands to build a sports and entertainment hub on the Shannon Parklands over in Dartmouth. It would include a $130 million scaled-down stadium. And thanks to an arrangement with Sports Nova Scotia, the use of that stadium would be some 300 days a year outside of football dates. We still, however, do not know how much this group that wants to bring a CFL team to Halifax wants from we taxpayers, both city and provincial taxpayers. And Schooner Sports and Entertainment's Anthony LeBlanc joins me on the phone here this afternoon. Mr. LeBlanc, good afternoon to you, sir.
Well, and good afternoon to you as well, Mr. Howe.
I appreciate you joining us here today. And I guess the question we're all still waiting to hear about is, what do you want from we taxpayers?
Well, I mean, obviously this weekend was a big weekend for us. We started a little early on Friday in Moncton announcing the location of the Touchdown Atlantic game, which, of course, was exciting for August 25th this summer. And then on Saturday, we had Commissioner Ambrosi in town with us over in Dartmouth to do an update, his CFL 2.0 vision update. And at that point, as you mentioned, we provided an update in regards to the relationship with Canada Lands Company, as well as our new relationship with Sport Nova Scotia. And we were joined by their CEO, Jamie Ferguson. So, you know, people have asked why it's taken longer. And I think, you know, part of it, I'd hate to say we were naive being the Schooners group, but obviously, you know, negotiations to acquire a large portion of land always takes a little bit longer than is expected. So really what has happened is now that we have the letter of intent executed with Canada Lands Company, it allows us to finish off the proposal work that needs to go to the HRM staff, as well as the province of Nova Scotia. So we're 90% of the way done. The work that now needs to be done is in regards to what are the elements that are going to be part of this stadium proposal. Is there any additional requirements from HRM or the province in regards to infrastructure, which we doubt. But all of that needs to kind of be put together and then presented to council. So we are excited with the announcement, in particular with Sport Nova Scotia, because it really does allow us to focus this as a community stadium, and any additional elements that are required to make it CFL ready will be borne by the Schooners group.
All right, but will the taxpayers of Halifax and Nova Scotia, will you make a request for some kind of involvement from them? Will you want taxpayers' money for your whole effort here, Anthony?
Well, I think, Rick, we've been pretty open throughout this process that we are looking for public involvement. We have spelled out pretty clearly what those proposals will look like. As a matter of fact, the CAO, Jacques Dubé, presented to the HRM Council back in November of last year that it would be around a tax increment financing plan as the municipality's involvement. And the Premier, while the proposal hasn't been provided to him in writing, they do anticipate that it will be around, concepts such as the existing hotel tax levy being increased by a marginal amount, as well as the concept of possibly introducing one in regards to car rentals. So those are really the involvements. And we have started recently having discussions to see if there is a desire from the federal government to be involved. And we have seen, you know, the fact that this is going to be focused more on, and certainly the usage will be substantially more from the community side of things. There is a desire, but at this point, there hasn't been any formal commitments.
All right. And when might we expect to see that business case? I mean, every time I ask a city councilor, their response to me is, We haven't seen the business case. We can't give you an answer until we see the business case. When are they going to get that, Anthony LeBlanc?
Well, I seem to always be my own worst enemy on that front by putting out timelines that we then don't have an opportunity to fulfill. So, look, I think the way I'm going to answer it is I think the mayor made a good comment earlier this calendar year that decisions need to be made this year. And we agree with that. We've said, you know, the summer is going to be critical. As I said, now that we have the letter of intent executed with Canada Lands, it allows us to go out and do that final piece of work, which really is a market study to understand what are the elements that can be supported in and around a stadium, which, of course, ultimately would be under the guidance of Canada Lands Company. But I do think it's probably in the neighborhood of a month or two of work that we have to do before we can give a fulsome package, which includes everything. And we plan on doing that concurrently at the same time with both the municipality and the province. So I'm certainly aiming to get that done for the latter part of spring. And then, again, Mr. Dubé has been very clear that once he and staff, and I'm sure the province feels the same way, once they receive that package, they then need, you know, a series of months to analyze. So I'd say we're still, you know, the summer time frame, I think, is still reasonable for us to at least be able to come back and say, you know, the proposal's been submitted. They have reviewed it. This is where we're leaning, and we're hopefully moving towards some form of approval.
I believe it was the CFL Commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, who revealed some time ago that the ownership group, your group, was ready to invest $60 million of its own money into this project. Was that an accurate statement that he made?
I think it was over time. I mean, that involves a number of elements. That certainly involves our franchise fee, all of the work we're doing right now. But we have been very clear throughout, Rick, that we understand that we need to be involved. And I mean, there's two ways we see being involved in the stadium. One is, of course, we continue to say, even though we will use the stadium maybe 10 to 15% of the time compared to other groups, we will operate it and take on the financial obligation of operating the facility. That's a big deal. That's $3 to $4 million a year on average. And then, of course, we will be involved, and we articulated that this weekend, that, you know, the community aspect of this stadium, what we're proposing or what we will formally propose to various levels of government, is to build a community stadium with roughly 12,000 fixed seats. That's the number that Mr. Ferguson and his colleagues at Sport Nova Scotia feel is ample for them to be able to go after the regional, national, and international events they haven't been able to do. So obviously that's going to be too small of a stadium for the needs we would have as a CFL team. So
yeah.
Any additional seating that goes up, will be borne at the cost of the Schooners Group. So we will certainly be involved in a big way in the financial side of making this community stadium CFL ready.
So Sport Nova Scotia would pay half of this then?
No. Sport Nova Scotia will certainly be involved as a, you know, operator and programmer, but we're not asking for any financial contribution from Sport Nova Scotia.
But any group that uses the stadium would obviously have to pay a rental fee then, would they?
Well, see, and that's the beauty, and that's one of the things that Sport Nova Scotia likes about this so much. Look, we understand, and I've been clear throughout, that, yes, we are looking for various levels of government to be involved, but our view is, at that point, then, if there are government sources that are helping fund the stadium, it would be insincere to go out and expect these sport groups to have to pay. So one of the things that is a real benefit to Sport Nova Scotia is this is going to really drive down their, you know, sport organizations' costs, because, no, there will not be a cost associated with renting and using the field. That's all part of the arrangement. And this is all about driving community use and ensuring that, you know, in particular, youth groups have access to fields and help drive down the cost to families of having their children involved in sport organizations. And this, if you talk to Jamie Ferguson at Sport Nova Scotia, he'll tell you that's a big part of the cost to date is getting access to the field. So that's why these groups are so excited. And as we said, this is a very unique plan that we've put together that we think could really become a base plan for other communities in the future.
We'll be talking, by the way, with Jamie Ferguson, the executive director of Sport Nova Scotia, tomorrow morning. But before I let you go, Anthony, is there a plan B? That is, if Halifax, when push comes to shove and a decision is made and Halifax rejects your proposal, is Moncton your plan B?
Well, first off, we're certainly hopeful that they don't reject our proposal. And our focus right now, we have had very good conversations with Moncton about their long-term involvement. Obviously, the Touchdown Atlantic this coming summer, we've talked to them about the concept of, once we get approvals in Halifax, of moving forward and starting play in Moncton for a season or two. But no, we have not had any form of conversations about a, as you call it, Plan B. Our focus is getting things done in Halifax.
Well, hopefully, again, as you say, perhaps by sometime in June, we get a sense of what it is you're expecting from we taxpayers, and we can get a decision on this and either move ahead or move on, basically.
Exactly. No, we couldn't agree more.
I appreciate your time here, Anthony. Thanks very much. We'll talk again.
You got it. Thanks, Rick.
All right, take care. That's Anthony LeBlanc. He's the spokesman for the ownership group, the leader of the ownership group behind this bid to bring a CFL franchise to Halifax and, of course, a sports stadium as well. And they have, again, reached a tentative deal with the Canada Lands for the Shannon Park lands. The question now is, what will the role of the taxpayers of HRM and the province of Nova Scotia, what will their roles be? And we'll find out, hopefully, we think, within the next 2 months anyway. All right, 12:17 our time. Back with more right after this. It's 12:20, and it's time now for a Halifax History Moment. And joining me on the phone this afternoon is historian, author, and tour guide, Mr. Blair Beed. Good afternoon, Blair.
Good afternoon, Rick.
How are you today, sir?
I'm terrific.
Good. Glad to hear. I always like it
How
when my
that?
Guests are
terrific.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that things are going well here this morning for you.
I'm not one of the people that has to drive anywhere.
I was just going to say, obviously, you weren't stuck in traffic this morning.
No, but I did go down to St. Patrick's Church to drop something off, and boy, the lineup on Gottigan Street.
Yep, Gottigan, Roby, pretty much all the entry points.
Yeah, and it was like, wow, but I just zipped in on Brunswick Street and had no problem, but hey.
Yeah.
Traffic, boy.
Indeed. It's going to be an issue for the next 4 months, maybe even longer. So what have you got for us today, sir?
Well, in 1861, in Hansport, Nova Scotia, Robert Shaw opened his brick plant.
Really? Goes back to 1861.
1861, now Shaw Group. But 1861, they opened their brick plant.
In Hansport, you said?
In Hansport, Nova Scotia.
Yep.
But then they had to go from handmade bricks into machine bricks. And great thing was they were helped in business in 1897 because of a fire that destroyed most of the town of Windsor. And there was rebuilding of a lot of properties there in 1897 to 1900.
Using a lot of brick.
And then the Halifax explosion of 1917. But then along came the Depression. And people weren't really doing much, so L.E. Shaw Brick built a group of homes on Armview Avenue in the 1930s to showcase brick.
And isn't there a bunch of, aren't they based out of Enfield or Elmsdale now?
They are.
Yeah.
The company itself has moved, and yes, they're into brick and concrete.
But there's a lot of brick homes out that way as well.
Yes, and Clayton Park, when the Clayton Park was built on the Clayton family property, brick was a big part of the Clayton Park development for the Shaw Group. But this Armview Avenue you're talking about is where you find a lot of Tudor-style and brick houses, all brick. A lot of subdivisions is just the front face, but these are four-sided brick homes down on the arm, and they are on property that used to be part of the estate of Sir Charles Tupper, Prime Minister of Canada.
Really?
And his estate was called Armview, and Armdale was the estate, and the whole neighborhood across the water is known as Armdale, but Armview Avenue, and then his house would be on Armview and Tupper Grove.
Is it still there?
The house is still there. The city did allow them to chop off part of the lawn to build a house, unfortunately, but for now, it's a rental, the house, because Sir Charles Tupper's house was expanded and became known as the Armdale Hotel. And in the back, there's something like seven places to put your carriage in a big, long carriage house.
Yeah.
And that's still there.
Huh.
And up on Prince Arthur Street, and the Prince Arthur, it's a very small street. You think, gee, poor Prince Arthur got to sort of taken. Yeah. But, of course, Connaught Avenue was named after a Governor General of Canada who was Prince Arthur, Duke of Connaught.
Okay.
And but on there on Prince Arthur is the home, a summer villa of Sir Robert Borden.
Oh, really? Another Prime Minister.
Yeah. Of Canada.
Now, Tupper, Borden was born in this province, was he not?
They both were.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if Tupper was or not. All right, yeah.
Tupper from Amherst, Nova Scotia, and Borden from Grand Pré.
Yeah.
And but no, both born, but they needed a house in the capital of Nova Scotia because that's, you know, it was a power base at the time.
And it would just happen to be along the Northwest Arm, one of the, you know, ritziest places.
The Northwest Arm, there were these large estate houses. There's two or three others. One, which was built in a cottage in 1870s, has now been recently torn down, and they're building something. First thing they put up was a large fence, because the property is something like 3 acres of land.
Really?
Right on the water.
Wow.
But one of your callers mentioned that buses and trucks never went down that shortcut, but actually, yes, because I used to take my tour buses down there.
Just before they put the speed bumps
before on? Before there
it?
Were bumps.
Yeah.
And before the trees got too overhanging. And at the bottom of Jubilee Road was the Jubilee Boat Club.
Yes.
And it was established in 1907. And you used to be able to take your tour bus down and have this great view right to the Dingle. But now it's a condominium project there that I think they sell for like $1 million each, and there's 17 of them.
So the boat club's not there anymore?
No, that was torn down for this condo project that then filled in the lots, because the water lots in that area are granted from King George II, so you can build into the water, as long as you don't interrupt navigation or fish habitat. So along the arm, the peninsula, people have filled in their front yard and built another house.
Wow. The lifestyles of the rich and famous, what?
I say they do very well, and the speed bumps came in because it was a shortcut, and not just a shortcut for, oh, I'm a nice worker for downtown and I have to make a living, but it was the speed people were going on the narrow streets. You know, they were speeding to get downtown. And so that's why they put in the speed bumps, because cars could still go down there.
Yeah.
Motor coach bus is not comfortable.
And cars could still go down there now. And again, if some are suggesting, if you're, you know, if they've closed the arm view off to, you know, the through traffic because they shut the rotary or the quid pull down at the rotary, but they could still allow cars to use arm view if they directed truck traffic and buses up the Shebucta Road detour, right?
Well, I imagine that, you know, as long as people were not speeding through the neighborhood would be nice.
But the speed bumps are going to, you know,
well, the speed bumps definitely will do something to cars.
Yeah.
But that area was only built on in the 1930s when the estates were divided up, and there's still Victorian homes down there, some of which are registered.
It's a lovely area.
But it's a lovely area that until the 1930s was very still almost rural feeling overlooking the Northwest Arm. But I say they showcased the brick. They built the brick houses all along Armview Avenue so people could see, oh, I can build a brick house, because that's not a usual thing in Halifax for brick.
Well, again, it's a fascinating story. And, of course, Armview and that area very much in the news right now because of the work on the CN Bridge. And somebody wants you to give us a bit of a history lesson. Maybe we could do this next week, Blair. On the CN Bridge and the railway bridges in this town. Maybe something to think about?
Sure thing. And Dominion Atlantic Railway.
Indeed. You have a great week.
Very good.
Thank you, Blair.
All right.
All the best, bud. Bye-bye. Blair Mead, our resident historian and tour guide and author, of course, in another Halifax History Moment for us here this Monday afternoon. And on that note, thanks for tuning us in today, and I think we'll do it again tomorrow. Hope you join me right here. Same bat time, same bat channel. For my producer, Katie Hartigh, I'm Rick Howe. Have yourself a fine afternoon, and we'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And remember, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention.